He is a racist. He is a con man. And he is a cheat.
President Trump's former attorney takes hammer and tongs to his former boss. It's Friday, March 1st, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, the Trump-Kim summit in Hanoi ends abruptly and without agreement. U.S.-China trade talks on the rocks in Beijing. And learning history by listening to the dead. It's all on today's VOA Asia. President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un abruptly cut short their two-day summit Thursday amid differing accounts over why they were unable to reach an agreement to dismantle Pyongyang's nuclear weapons. VOA White House correspondent Steve Herman is in Hanoi and has been listening to what both sides are saying.
Well, the president said that they got close, but they were not able to work out a deal. Because of differences in what the North Koreans wanted, which he said were the removal of sanctions on the country, and what the United States wanted, which was to dismantle all of its nuclear materials production, not only at the Yongbyon site, but some other sites as well. Now, the North Koreans are disputing that assessment. They held a rare midnight news conference at the hotel where Kim Jong-un is staying, and the foreign minister of North Korea, Ri Yong-ho, told a group of reporters that that's not what they were asking for, that they were only asking for the removal of partial sanctions. And the U.S. wanted something beyond Yongbyon dismantled, and they could not make an agreement on that. He was also a bit defiant, saying that the U.S. Wants to continue negotiations, but that North Korea's proposal will never change.
Do you think that this is signaling maybe perhaps a distancing between the two nations on this issue?
Well, a number of analysts and those who have worked on these sort of issues as diplomats for many decades tend to believe that not only did the United States go into this half-baked, but there really wasn't even a cake in the oven. Usually when you sit down, usually when you have your two top leaders sit down for these sort of discussions, nearly everything has been agreed to, but it appears that there had not even been a fundamental agreement between the United States and North Korea by the underlings of both President Trump and the North Korean leader Kim Jong-un by the time that their leaders showed up. So
right.
A lot of people are not surprised that this collapsed. I think what was a surprise is that it happened so suddenly, because until perhaps an hour or two before we got word that this final lunch was being canceled and there would not be a signing ceremony, there were very positive words being spoken by both Trump and Kim when there was a small group of reporters that were allowed in the rooms for their couple of the bilateral meetings that they had.
I do have to say, from half a world away, it does seem that this whole thing was a bit by the seat of their pants. But at the end of it, North Korea gets to keep their nuclear weapons. North Korea gets to keep running their centrifuges. They keep their intercontinental ballistic missiles. They didn't have the topic of human rights come up. It seems that North Korea is walking away a bit of the winner in this summit.
Well, I think just by showing up, North Korea was the winner, because it's a big propaganda victory for Kim Jong-un to shake hands with the leader of the most powerful nation on the planet and in some sense achieve parity with the United States and respect, something that North Korea has yearned for decades. But what remains is, as you said, North Korea maintains these nuclear and long-range ballistic missile programs, although they have not been testing, and President Trump has repeatedly said he's partly satisfied as long as there is no further testing. But the North Koreans still have these debilitating sanctions in place, and for an impoverished nation, it is really something that they do want to get rid of.
Steve Herman in Hanoi. Meanwhile, in Washington this week, drama of a different sort. President Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, told lawmakers Wednesday that his longtime boss knew in advance about the WikiLeaks email dump that damaged his 2016 presidential election opponent, Democrat Hillary Clinton. In an hours-long hearing that will be his only public testimony, Cohen laid down a damning list of allegations against the president. VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson has more.
I regret the day I said yes to Mr. Trump.
Harsh words from Michael Cohen, the man who served Donald Trump for a decade.
He is a racist, he is a con man, and he is a cheat. He was a presidential candidate who knew that Roger Stone was talking with Julian Assange about a WikiLeaks drop on Democratic National Committee emails.
The Trump campaign's role in releasing dirt on opponent Hillary Clinton revealed in Cohen's last chance, as he sees it, to tell the truth.
And nothing but the truth, so help you God.
Before his prison time for lying to Congress, something Cohen believes Trump encouraged.
He would look me in the eye and tell me there's no Russian business, and then go on to lie to the American people by saying the same thing. In his way, he was telling me to lie.
Cohen said he had no direct evidence of collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign, but he did provide proof about a different scandal with a copy of a check.
I am providing a copy of a $35,000 check that President Trump personally signed from his personal bank account on August 1st of 2017. When he was president of the United States.
A payment allegedly preventing adult film star Stormy Daniels from revealing her decade-old affair with Trump just before the 2016 election. Just one part of Trump's pattern of dishonesty, Cohen told lawmakers.
He had no desire or intention to lead this nation, only to market himself and to build his wealth and power.
But Republicans said convicted felon Cohen made for the worst possible character witness.
If the Democrats were after the truth, they'd have an honest person here testifying.
And charged that Cohen was attacking the president out of spite.
You wanted to work in the White House.
No, sir.
You didn't get brought to the dance.
Democrats said they found Cohen credible. His testimony speaking to how Trump operates.
There is a growing body of evidence that he will stand for nothing in terms of making sure that his hide is protected. I mean, he will obstruct justice, he will violate the law.
But it's not clear if that's enough evidence to lead to impeaching the president.
I think it's clear that there were statutory crimes committed. It requires us to ask the question of whether these are crimes against the republic itself and whether these are offenses against democracy. And I think America's going to be involved in a dialogue.
A discussion most Democrats say cannot be resolved until special counsel Robert Mueller delivers his report on the Russian collusion allegations. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
In a Newsweek like this, it's hard to know where to look. And that's why we look to VOA senior national correspondent Jim Malone for context. Jim, first, where do you think the president was looking this week?
You know, I got to wonder, with a long plane ride there, what might be going through or gone through the president's mind. Look, the summit did not result in what he had maybe hoped for. He has staked a lot on a foreign policy success, like an improved relationship with North Korea and denuclearization. At the same time, he basically was hounded back here in Washington by this congressional testimony from a once trusted associate, Michael Cohen. It really shows you the reverse sides of the Trump presidential coin in a way, that it's hard for him to get away from some of the things that are dragging him down back here in Washington. And of course, people have long speculated that the decision by Michael Cohen to cooperate with prosecutors is a real problem for President Trump because of all the things he knows, and some of which, even after the riveting congressional testimony this week, we're not fully aware of because he can't talk about it because it involves other prosecutorial tangents.
You just released a feature using this term, sort of split-screen moment. Where do you think the American public is focusing? We can only really look at one thing at a time.
You know, that's a great question. And the way I look at that now is this would be an extraordinary type of, simultaneous events in any other presidency. But are we becoming inured to this under the Donald Trump presidency? It's almost as if we are expecting chaos on a weekly basis. And the latest example being this, on one hand, aspirations of world peace and, you know, less threat of a nuclear conflict, combined with a former associate trying to drag him down.
Given that, given these two major events, the summit and the Cohen hearing, do you think either of them suggests where the country may go from here?
I think the country, yes, where it's going to be going is where it's been headed for a long time, and it remains divided. The people who support
like
Donald Trump, watching that congressional testimony of Michael Cohen, I really would question whether they saw anything or heard anything that would change their minds. Mr. Trump is a known commodity at this point for both critics and for supporters. What is going to change this dynamic? And as we know, Doug, we are ramping up now for perhaps the mother of all presidential elections next year. And you can already see the president is supremely, keenly focused on his reelection battle. And everything he does, including this attempt on the summit in Vietnam, was aimed toward helping him for his reelection. He's going to be singularly focused on that. But the distractions of the Russia investigation, which we think may be moving to a close soon, and the Cohen testimony now and all that that entails, it just ensures this sort of turmoil and chaos indefinitely, I think, with no end in sight.
Jim Malone, invaluable insight. Thank you, as always.
You bet.
And you're listening to VOA Asia.
The news never stops. So keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Thailand's legislature passes a cybersecurity bill allowing authorities access to people's personal information without a court order. Pakistan will release the Indian fighter pilot captured after his plane was shot down earlier this week in the disputed Kashmir region. Organizers of Tokyo's Olympic Games announced a stringent ban on all tobacco and vaping devices at all Olympic and Paralympic venues. And Afghanistan is planning to hold a Grand Council of Tribal Elders and Political Leaders next month to discuss how to end the Taliban insurgency. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. The top U.S. trade official said this week that a new trade agreement with China is not yet close to being completed. State Department correspondent Nike Ching reports from Washington on the latest in the talks and how U.S. concerns over high-tech issues remain a key point of friction.
After months of talks, the United States and China are still not yet near a trade agreement. that addresses President Donald Trump's concern over the trade deficit with China.
What the president wants is an agreement that, number one, is enforceable, but that changes the pattern of practice of forced technology transfer, intellectual property protection, large industrial policy subsidies, and then a whole variety of specific impediments to trade and unfair practices in the area of agriculture, in the area of services. What we want is fair trade that requires structural change, and it has to be enforceable.
China tech giant Huawei signed up new 5G partners at an international wireless conference this week. But American lawmakers remain highly skeptical of the company's government links and pattern of stealing commercial secrets.
I think the U.S. has to be very serious about intellectual property theft, about security, cybersecurity issues, and Huawei has cheated over time. ZTE has been another problem. So I think the United States has to be serious about it, and I believe the president will take those things into consideration when he's negotiating with China.
Washington is increasingly troubled by Huawei's expansion in Europe, warning traditional allies the Chinese tech company's presence may complicate their partnership with the United States.
Cyber-facilitated theft of intellectual property, for example, has become notorious around the world, but the Chinese government has been doing that very systematically in order to advantage its own national champion industries in particular sectors.
As Trump is looking at another summit with Chinese President Xi Jinping to finalize a trade deal, pressure is mounting to ban the use of Huawei's equipment in sensitive U.S. communication infrastructure. Nike Chin, VOA News, State Department.
Happening now in Asia, markets slid in response to the abrupt end of the U.S.-North Korea summit. Japan's Nikkei 225 skidded 0.8%, while the Shanghai Composite fell 0.4%. Meanwhile, Hong Kong's Hang Seng declined 0.6%. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, February is Black History Month in the U.S. It's a time to recognize African-American history and the diverse contributions that they have made to the nation. One place where many of New York's notable African-Americans can be remembered is at the historic Greenwood Cemetery in Brooklyn. It's a serene and well-tended 200-hectare plot of land where over 500,000 people of all races lie buried. To find out more, VOA's Adam Phillips met with Greenwood historian Jeff Richman.
That's the bell atop Greenwood's carved Gothic entrance. It tolls whenever a new body is received at the storied cemetery, which opened in 1838. Last week, Joe Richman conducted his fifth annual Black in Brooklyn tour of Greenwood.
We sort of had an equal divide of people of color and people not, and particularly the people of color were appreciative of learning their background and their stories. The story of African-American history has not been told to a large extent. It has been ignored or lost.
Evidence of slavery and the struggle for emancipation are visible at Greenwood. One plot belongs to the Isaac T. Hopper family. The Hoppers were prominent abolitionists who sheltered runaway slaves. Richman notes that two former slaves, Scipio and Margaret Franks, are interred there.
She was freed by her owner, came north, went to work for the Hopper family, and her husband, Scipio, was still enslaved. She was able to save money and, with money from the Hoppers, purchase his freedom.
Several African Americans at Greenwood died rich. Jeremiah Hamilton, who died in 1875, made millions in real estate and Wall Street. His stone is dwarfed by the towering granite monument belonging to Elizabeth Gloucester.
Elizabeth Gloucester was a woman of color born free, who was really a self-taught real estate tycoon and became this millionaire in Brooklyn.
Samuel Cornish was the co-founder of Freedom's Journal, the nation's first black newspaper. Cornish was buried in 1858. Some graves are far more recent. One humble marker shows the place where the painter Jean-Michel Basquiat was buried after a fatal drug overdose in 1988.
And his paintings, which sold for good money when he was alive, are now selling for $25, $30 million in some cases. One of the most recent African-Americans interred here at Greenwood was Cedar Walton, who died in 2013. He had a long career as a composer and pianist, playing with the leading lights of African-American jazz. And we do, in fact, play his music on our tour.
Not all of Greenwood's graves are marked. One entire section, called the Freedom Lot, contains the remains of 1,400 African-Americans whose names are now forgotten, but whose resting place belongs to the ages. Adam Phillips, VOA News, Brooklyn, New York.
This news alert from VOA Asia. Singapore has been ranked as the best place for Asian Pacific millennials to live, according to a new study by Value Champion. Also making the list were Guangzhou and Hong Kong. The region is home to 58% of the world's millennial population. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. Finally, a pioneering camera inspired by human biology has been developed in Australia and will officially be unveiled at an air show this week. Phil Mercer in Sydney has that story.
The device called the AstroSight is designed to help prevent satellites located beyond the Earth's atmosphere from crashing into each other. It's been developed at the Western Sydney University's International Centre for Neuromorphic Systems. It combines the disciplines of electrical engineering, computer science, signal processing, and neuroscience. The project has the support of the Australian military. The device can track objects in space in real time. Academics say it functions like the human eye and brain to produce high-resolution images even during hours of daylight. Associate Professor Greg Cohen.
It's modelled off the human eye, the actual photoreceptors in the retina, and the way they send information out, because they don't take frames, they don't take pictures. They send out just changes. It's really hard to track objects in space. There's a lot of space junk up there, there's a lot of satellites up there already, and we're launching more and more every day. So it's become a matter of national and international importance to make sure that things don't collide. And because you can move the sensor, there's no reason why we couldn't do this from an aircraft, or from a ship, or from a train.
Researchers say that with tens of thousands of man-made objects orbiting in space, the risk of collision between debris, satellites, and spacecraft is significant. This has ramifications for commercial organizations, but also for national and international defense agencies. Military officials in Australia say the device is a game changer because of its ability to see into space during the day and its mobility. The AstroSight was developed with the Royal Australian Air Force as part of Plan Jericho, a long-term strategy to make it one of the most technologically advanced air forces in the world. It'll be demonstrated for the first time in public at this week's Avalon Air Show in the Australian state of Victoria. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And that is it for us for today and for this week. And what a news week it was. We hope you'll be back with us on Monday. We'll be here. And until then, have yourselves a great and restful weekend.